The Memories.
The clock is down to 48 seconds. 20-10, Colorado leads Nebraska. They have waited a long time for this. So many times, the red flood has come into Folsom Field, and they have gone back across the border to the north, a winner. It won't be this time.
The Stories.
Prukop to the corner for Carrington, intercepted! Colorado got it! Witherspoon! With the biggest play in Colorado football for years!
And now, as a supplement to over 40 years worth of CU football coverage in the CU at the Game archives, here is Stuart with his CU at the Game podcast.
Greetings, Buff fans, from CU at the Game. This is Stuart White here, publisher and editor for the CU at the Game website and your host for the CU at the Game podcast. I am joined for this episode by Brad Geiger and Neil Langland, and we will review CU's final trip to the Rose Bowl as a member of the Pac-12. The Buffs fell to number 23 UCLA, 28-16, and we will do the post-mortem on the game, giving out our grades for what about the CU effort was excellent, what was satisfactory, and what still needs improvement. We'll then move on to our tips for the upcoming matchup against number 16, Oregon State. Our preview will look at the game from the perspectives of talent, intangibles, preparation, and statistics, before giving you our predictions for the game to be played before a sellout crowd at Folsom Field for homecoming. So, can the Colorado coaching staff find a way to protect its most precious resource, quarterback Shedeur Sanders? Or will the most sacked quarterback in the FBS continue to be harassed by opposing defenses? Will the Buffs come up with a defensive game plan to stop Oregon State running back Damian Martinez, who has been a force for the Beavers this season and who had over 170 yards and 3 touchdowns rushing the last time CU played Oregon State? Will the Buffs be able to regain a little Folsom Field magic and restore the nation's faith in Coach Prime and company? Or will the national narrative about the Buffs continue to sour as the calendar turns to November? Let's find out. Okay. And we're back, joined from Highlands Ranch, Colorado, by Brad Geiger. How's Brad doing today?
Brad's doing fine. You know, got through the first real snow of the season and survived it. Didn't have to shovel a whole heck of a lot, so I'm doing all right.
All right. And from downtown Denver, Neil, I wish I was skiing Langland. How are you doing today?
Well, you know, that blast of winter has left a lot of vacant seats in the outdoor restaurants down on the square. But on the other side of the coin, it appears that we may have a ski season this fall. So I'm sleeping in my long johns just to get ready.
Okay. We are here to do our weekly review preview podcast. We're going to do the postmortem on UCLA, number 23 UCLA. 28 Colorado 16, and do our preview, our tips for number 16, Oregon State, coming to Boulder Saturday night, 8 p.m. ESPN, another national telecast for your Golden Buffaloes. So I guess we can just jump right into it. Let's talk a little bit about the UCLA game. Not particularly pretty to watch, especially on the offensive side of the ball for the Golden Buffs. We look at it from the perspective of excellent, satisfactory, and needs improvement. Neil, I'll let you go first. Anything in the excellent category that you had for your Buffs that beat the spread by getting a late touchdown?
Well, let's start with Shedeur Sanders and his warrior-like conduct and his class in his interviews and just being a team guy and just taking punishment and coming back for more and playing well under the circumstances. He gets an E+ for the week. Also, I'm going to give the defense an excellent. They were on the field too long and they didn't get any help from the offense, but they kept the team in the game, played well enough to win, and showed improvement that I did not anticipate. And we got back into the turnover game with the defense that forced 4.5. And those weren't gimme turnovers. Those were all forced by the defense. So that gets an E- in my book. I mean, they did give up an easy one right after half, but Shiloh wasn't back there to keep things together. So I'm going to give the defense overall an E.
Okay. Brad, anything you can find for an effort where the Buffs were held to less than 250 yards and gave up almost 500 yards of offense?
Yeah, it was – first of all, yeah, it's hard to say that the defense improved when they gave as much as they did, but they wore out. And they played – the defensive line, I thought, played better than they had probably all year. You know, the strength of this team has been the back, and I thought the defensive line came hard. They got pressure when we didn't expect them to do. So definitely satisfactory. We got to see some more of our running backs. They clearly are trying to make an effort with the running game. I thought there were some changes in the play calling that I think might lead to progress later on, either in the season. So I think those were both satisfactory. And, you know, Shadur is just Shadur. He's just that good. Our wide receivers are that good. When there was time, the wide receivers were able to find openings. So I would say that the passing game, when the pass was thrown, was excellent.
Okay. All I had for excellence, when you're getting beat that bad on the line, everything, like, would echo what you guys are talking about, the four turnovers. Colorado started out 3-0. The Buffs had 10 turnovers in those three games. Then the next four games, they only had two total and went 1-3. And then picking up four in the first half, you get four turnovers in a half, that's enough to win a game. It should be enough to win a game. You should get enough points off of those turnovers. I think the Buffs had three total points out of the four turnovers. So not on the defensive end of things, but I think if we could get four turnovers a game, much less four turnovers a half, that bodes well for CU's chances going forward. Brad, you did a little bit on satisfactory. Anything that met your criteria for satisfactory in the UCLA game?
Yeah, I thought the defensive play calling was better. Seemed a bit, little bit more creative and a little using our personnel a little bit better. As I said, I thought the defensive line was satisfactory. I would say, you know what? I'm even going to say the effort was satisfactory. After what had happened in the second half of the last game we played, I thought the team came out ready to play, enthused. They got beat by a better team, but in terms of the effort and the wanting to do it, and you know, Shiloh got thrown out for a play of aggression that I thought was perhaps not as significant as some. So I will say the effort was satisfactory plus.
Okay. Neil, anything that would fit in the middle category of satisfactory for you from the game?
Well, I'm going to piggyback on Brad with the defense. I thought the line played well. I thought the linebackers were supporting the run very well. They were getting off blocks. They were putting pressure on the quarterback. I thought they did very well. Cornerbacks did okay. They seemed like they were getting a little bit better on the quick slants and the crossing patterns, but they were helped a lot by the pressure that was put on by the line and the linebackers, the safeties. And I think I would put the number 43.
That's your good friend, Trevor Woods.
Yeah, Trevor Woods, thank you. That, you know, has moved to safety, but he's kind of walking around playing some pass defense, run support. He had a very good game, I thought. Also, I think the place kicking was fine this time. The special teams, however, does just on the border of getting a satisfactory because they let someone run free that should have blocked one of those field goals, and somehow the kid missed it. So that's a big mistake, and that could cost the game, and that needs to be fixed. I thought we had, after the first week, cinched that up, but seems like it has reemerged. And I think it's an assignment issue that the coaches need to correct. And I don't know what it's going to take, but that special teams get an S minus.
Yeah, I don't know how. I went back and I rewound the, and I was like, how could he have missed? I mean, I've never seen anybody actually run past the kicker. The fact that he was unblocked and missed the ball altogether. It was a deja vu. It was like the TCU game where somebody came in unblocked and blocked our first attempt at a field goal. And you're just, wow, this is just going to be bad. They drove all the way down there to kick a field goal and have it blocked, run back for a touchdown. But yeah, the guy just literally got there too fast to block the kick. So I have under satisfactory. I think the defensive effort in general, I think, like you guys are saying, a pretty good game plan, pretty good effort for a team that looked really bad in the second half of the Stanford game. Giving up 28 points doesn't sound like a satisfactory effort, but a lot of that was how things kind of fell apart in the second half. That was, you know, like you mentioned, Neil, the cheap touchdown to start the second half. I mean, if CU was giving up 28 points a game, they'd only be 84th in the nation in scoring defense. So 28 points is not something that's usually going to win you a lot of games. But I think if under the circumstances, that's about what CU has to hope for, is to hold somebody under 28 points. And UCLA, you know, only had 58 yards of total offense in the first quarter. And to go on, you know, back to what Brad, what you were talking about, how that they came out ready to play. The first drive was kind of reminiscent of the first drive against TCU, that they were doing what they wanted to do and having some success at it. They just threw three incomplete passes in the red zone, ended up with a field goal instead of a touchdown. But driving down the field, pretty exciting to see a game plan. And granted, they had 2 weeks to work on it, but you know, the first scripted play seemed to be working pretty well. So some satisfactory out of it. Neil, come back to you for a laundry list of needs improvement. Or do we just say the offensive line and just leave it at that?
Yeah, I don't want to pile on. Everyone saw it. We all saw it. We all cringed. It was hard to watch, probably the hardest thing to watch in CU football in a while. The Stanford game notwithstanding. Watching Sanders run for his life at the same time he was trying to catch the snap. Something is seriously wrong with the offensive line. Again, not to pile on, but some of it needs to be assignment. There was one play that I too played it back and watched some of it. There were four guys of our linemen standing around one UCLA player while one of the linebackers ran right by them and did a pressure, not possibly a sack on that play. We had a lot of that. I'm not sure if it's all assignment or if it's confusion with stunts or some technique issues, maybe some talent issues. That has to stop. Excuse me, we've been watching this for a while. And my concern with the performance is based in part on what seems to be a stubbornness by the offensive coaches, whoever's making the decisions, to play that same formation every time. And if one guy gets through, there's no one back there to pass block and to protect Shadur. Even the commentators at halftime and Herb Street during the second half were saying things like, they need to adjust their blocking scheme. They need to adjust their personnel. We've been saying that here in this podcast now for some time. And it's nice to get some professional recognition of that. But if they keep going along this same path without protecting Shadur, there's going to be something bad happen that we don't want to have happen. And it's already started if our quarterback is getting pain shots at halftime. That's not a good sign. And that is anything a flashing red light on the dashboard. That has to be fixed. And until it does, all of our skill players are going to waste. All of the great game plans are going to waste. That's about it. Sorry, I went further than I...
No, that's fine. I mean, we've been saying it since August. If Shadur gets hurt, the season's over. And there doesn't seem to be a concerted effort to not have that happen. I remember one play, again, it was a Herb Street type of thing, that it was just a quick out to the wide receiver, like a wide receiver screen. It was on a shotgun. And Sanders didn't have to do anything other than turn and throw. And he still got hit. So it wasn't even 1-2. It was just take ball, throw ball, and he still got hit. So, Brad, anything you'd like to mention in terms of needs improvement? Or would you like to talk a little bit more about the offensive line and the needs going forward for the Buff strategy?
Yeah, I'm not going to rub it in on the offensive line. It is a combination of X's and O's and Jimmy's and Joe's. Our guys aren't good enough, and it doesn't feel like the coaches are adjusting to it the way we want them to. You know, I can't imagine that Deion is sitting back there all thrilled with it. I can't imagine that the coaches' meetings are a real good time for anybody. Well, we're just not seeing the changes we need to see. And that's as good a defensive line as we're going to face, you know?
Yes.
You know, and that was and we talked before this. None of this was a shock. So there is that, but it's just, it has to get better. We just can't live like that, or we're not going to have a quarterback. And we know we don't have a backup quarterback.
Yeah. And the rushing attack was non-existent. Counting the 7 sacks, it was 24 carries for 25 yards. This is for a team that was already in the bottom 10 in the country in rushing. Mm-hmm. Going against the number one rushing defense, it just seemed like we weren't even going to try. They didn't even have to put anybody, you know, hands in the ground. They were just kind of standing up saying, okay, where's the quarterback? And I'm just going to meet you at the quarterback. But there's no respect for Colorado to run a draw or anything off tackle or any misdirection. Just they're going to throw the ball, and we know who has the ball, and that's the quarterback, and let's go get him. So, yeah, it was hard to watch. For the Buff faithful, there was some glimmer of hope, and if you want to look for the future, that Colorado received a commitment from a junior college offensive lineman today as we're recording. And I'm going to get his name wrong because it's not Isaiah. It's Issiah. So Issiah Walker, 6'5", 309, former 4-star recruit out of Miami. Been playing the last couple of years at Butler Community College. He's going to enroll in December and have 2 years of eligibility remaining. He was a 4-star recruit out of high school with all sorts of offers. Not getting only a couple of Power 5 offers coming out of community college, so I don't know how things have progressed for him, but he's a man now. He's a class of 2020 out of high school, so he's been around the game for a while. He's going to obviously have some experience coming in, but that's for 24 and 25. What we're going to do for 2023 remains to be seen. So anything else for you guys as a postmortem on the UCLA game? Or are we ready to move on to Oregon State?
I don't want to be negative all the time, so I made a note to mention this. In looking at some of the replays, the pass blocking is not good, and big guys are coming through the line that weigh anywhere from 270 to 330, and little Dylan Edwards in there at 170. Is sticking his face in and trying to block those guys and getting trucked repeatedly. So he should share with the Shadur Heart, Courage, and Devotion to Team Award. I really admire what he's trying to do, but the laws of physics simply won't allow him to succeed in that.
Yeah, but then it makes you wonder why Anthony Hankerson or Alton McCaskill aren't in there to block. The bigger backs should be in there. If you need a running back to block, maybe a guy that waste 40 pounds more should be the guy doing it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, if Dylan Edwards isn't going to be carrying the ball, if we're not going to have a running game, then at least you should have a blocking back. And if that's the best blocking back we have, then kudos for Dylan Edwards to stick his head in there and try and get the job done. Brad, anything else on UCLA before we move on to Oregon State?
No, I mean, this is what happens when you face a team that's been built. You know, we are building. They are built. The Chip Kelly experiment hasn't been massively successful, but he has had time to put together the team that works. And that matters.
Okay. Well, speaking of teams that have been built, Jonathan Smith has done an excellent job of taking and working, you know, doing less, doing more with less. You know, in Corvallis, not getting the four-star recruits, but taking it and what he has to work with and building a team. And so the 16th-ranked Oregon State Beavers are coming to Boulder. Again, it's going to be Saturday night at 8 p.m. on ESPN. And we're going to go through our tips, talk about talent, intangibles, preparation, and statistics. So, Brad, you want to kick us off on talent? Anything that you want to talk about, what you observed in terms of what the Beavers are bringing to town?
Well, I mean, you know, they're a little disappointed. This was a team that, you know, going into last week, wanted to still be in the Pac-12 championship hunt. They took a bad loss to Arizona. Talent-wise, they're fine. They're not USC. They're not Oregon. Their new recruit quarterback has been, or their transfer quarterback, DJ, whose last name I keep getting wrong, has been fine, but not the world beater that they thought he would be. This is a good team. It is probably overall slightly more talented than we are in terms of particularly line depth. But as opposed to USC, Oregon, UCLA, this not that kind of talent.
Okay. Neil? You love the lines. You love the depth chart in terms of height and weight. How is Oregon State stacking up against other teams that CU has faced?
Well, thanks for the lead-in, Stu. They're not big. They're not huge. UCLA was a fairly big offensive line. Oregon has a very large line. These guys are, you know, 290-ish, 305. But four of them are fourth or fifth year players, redshirt juniors or redshirt seniors. And their least experienced guy is their right tackle, who is a modest 334. They block well together. Having that kind of experience, like Brad said, having a built team where they've assembled this line over a few seasons, they block well. They've got a great running game. Also on the talent note is their main running back, Damian Martinez. He's not a little guy, but he moves like one. Watching him on TV, you expect him to be about 190, 195. He's 230.
Yeah.
He's a beast. And he has short area quickness. He has a good burst. And he just does not go down with one person trying to tackle him. That's going to be the biggest challenge, I think, for our defense next week is, or this week, excuse me, is to get a handle on that guy. And I think what they might want to do, not to getting too far ahead, is base their defense on trying to stop this guy and make them make their QB, who is good but not great, make him beat us. And however, the downside of that is the latest in the line of Boldens. They have good receivers. This kid is a water bug. He runs very well. He's all of 152 pounds, but he's leading the team in all-purpose yardage, may go over 1,000 on that this week. So they've got talent spread around, and they're good in the lines, and they have decent size on defense. So this is going to be a tough game, but not the defense that UCLA had, and certainly not the offense that we've seen from USC or others. It's going to be a grinded out and then throw the play action pass. Going to stretch our defense to the max, I think.
Yeah. Well, to put some names to what you've been talking about, you guys are going to make me try and say it. So the quarterback, DJ, and I watched the game, and every time they pronounced it, when I was watching the Arizona game, I was rehearsing it. I still can't get it. Uliangalele. That's not right, but it's close as I'm going to get it. So quarterback DJ, transfer from Clemson. Yeah, again, he is not one of the top quarterbacks in the Pac-12, but it takes a lot to be one of the top quarterbacks in the Pac-12 with all the talent that's going up and down the league. What impressed me is 17 touchdowns, only 4 interceptions. So you're not going to count on him to make a bunch of mistakes. He's been around for a number of years. He's been in hostile environments. He's not going to be rattled by the Folsom Field crowd. And while he's not a runner, he does have 5 rushing touchdowns. I think Buffett should also keep an eye out for a freshman quarterback that they sub in once in a while. He's number 0. Aiden Childs. He's very tall, very lanky. He's not filled out, but he's very quick. He doesn't come in very often, a couple of series, but he's completing like 75% of his passes, and like a third of his passes have gone for touchdowns. Had a 52-yard pass against Arizona this week. So when Aiden Childs comes in, you know, keep an eye on what he's going to do because he can run the ball, and he has a good arm. Neil, you mentioned Damian Martinez. If you're a Buff fan, you might have some bad memories. Last year when they played in Corvallis, Martinez had 22 carries for over 170 yards and 3 touchdowns against the Buffs. It was 42-9 that particular route. Neil, you mentioned offensive line. They have 2 all Pac-12 offensive linemen. So it's a good, strong group. And, yeah, until we can prove that we can stop the run, they're just going to run the ball. Mm-hmm. That being said, if we do make them pass, Silas Bowden is excellent. And the jitterbug you're talking about, Anthony Gould, Neil, he reminds me a lot of like a Ben Kelly kind of a player. He's not very big, might be a Jeremy Bloom kind of guy, but if he gets anything in space, we're going to be watching him run for a lot of yards. So, of course, wait for it. They have a tight end.
What?
It always worries me when we're going up, you know, against a team that has a tight end. Velling, he only has 21 catches on the year, but 8 of them for touchdowns. So we get inside the red zone, you know, look for them to throw to the tight end. I hope the CU defensive coaching staff is keeping an eye on that guy because, you know, he's going to score some touchdowns if given the opportunity. But, yeah, I agree, Neil, if Damian Martinez is the man. So if he's got 25 carries, if he's got 150 yards rushing, then it's going to be a long night for the Buff fans. The only saving grace is that the game will be over fast because they'll just run out the clock and run all over our defense. The Oregon State defense, good, not great. It's only giving up 21 points a game, 38th in the nation. They've got pretty good linebackers and a couple of, you know, sack people. If you hear it, the names Andrew Chatfield or Isaiah Hodgins, that means they're sacking our quarterback. So everyone that plays Colorado is looking forward to it, and those are the guys that do all the sacking for them. So, yeah, it's a well-built team. It's been constructed over a period of years, like Brad, you were talking about with UCLA. Jonathan Smith has built a real good team. Now, how much of this team is going to be together in 24 and 25 if Oregon State doesn't find a home? To be determined. But right now, Colorado's not going to play them in 24 and 25. They're going to be playing them in 23. So, Neil, going to the eye of our tips, intangibles, anything off the field that you think might play a role in how the game's going to play out?
Well, something you just mentioned, Stu, which is that this is the last time we'll see Oregon State as a Pac-12 member. And those guys may have some extra motivation, a bit of a chip on their shoulder for being left behind. Colorado was actually one of the first teams to leave, if not the first, if memory serves. So there's going to be some of that, maybe. There's Brian Lindgren, who used to be the OC here, who has been the OC at Oregon State during this rise, and he has proven himself to be very capable. So I think he's going to take some extra effort this week, perhaps, to show what Oregon can do. CU, after last week, their psyches have to be a bit bruised, especially after the Stanford game, absorbing two hard losses in that manner. It's going to take some great motivational work by the coaching staff and getting guys refocused through hard practices to kind of just forget all about that and get back to just doing what you can do. I'm not sure whether it's game plan or intangible or something, but I think the coaching staff has to spend some time in front of a mirror and examine their own systems, do some self-scouting, and devise some ways to make the offense go. We just can't continue like this. And if anything has to happen, is that the focus of the coaching has to change a little bit. There needs to be some flexibility in what they're doing.
Okay. Well, Brad, they had a bye week to come up with the best effort they could against UCLA. With Neil hoping for something to come up in 6 days between the UCLA and Oregon State game, or is there something else you see about the outside or off the field that makes a difference for this weekend?
You know, I think, like I said, I think Oregon State's disappointed with what happened last week. I think they had kind of chalked that up. They were looking for a three-game winning streak going into a tough end of the season. How they're going to react to that, we've kind of expect them to play with a chip, but they didn't last week, and I was a little surprised about that. They looked a little bit kind of discombobulated last week. Now, Arizona played good D. So, Oregon State's got more to play for. There's no doubt about that, but they've got to go on the road after a tough loss. This is the time of year where everybody knows who everybody else is. There's no surprises. We're not going to sneak up on anybody. They're not going to sneak up on us. I think Oregon State's – and my concern is that that's the point where a coaching staff that's been together, where a team that's been together has an advantage. We need to see what Prime and his people do when they're getting deserved national criticism, when they are the glass slipper breaks and it becomes a real team. And so we've got one coaching staff in Oregon State that is trying to prove that they can do that and hold their team together, and another one that's, I think, scrambling a little bit. I think that combination is going to be really interesting. So this may be as much a coaching game as it is a player game.
Okay. Let's see. For Tendril, I had kind of, again, to echo what you were saying, Brad, talk about the Pac-2, that these two teams, they, talk about Oregon State and Washington State, start off a combined 8-1, and the only loss was because they played each other. Both were ranked in the top 15. There was talk about, wouldn't it be great if these two teams played for the Pac-12 championship? Wouldn't these be great if one of these teams qualified for the college football playoff? You know, things along those lines, that thumbing their nose against the Pac-12 and beating everybody on their way out the door certainly was a motivation for these players. Now, losing to Arizona, having a second loss, chances of making the Pac-12 championship for Oregon State is certainly diminished significantly. I mean, they do finish with games against Washington and Oregon, so they do have the ability to have some say in who's going to play in the Pac-12 championship. But it's hard to see a path at this point where a two-loss team is going to end. Of course, they still have to play Oregon and Washington, so they to be only a two-loss teams would mean two big upsets. So the chances of making the Pac-12 championship are certainly diminished. What effect will that have on them coming to Boulder on the second half of a road trip? And the other thing I had on the CU side, and maybe this is just my cynical self coming out, but it's going to be a sellout. 9th straight sellout the Buffs are going to play. Next week will be the 10th straight sellout. Pretty much it all hinges on the Washington State game, the Friday night game in Pullman, because that Utah is going to be a sellout. So the only question of whether or not CU is going to play in front of 12 sellouts is whether or not it's cold in the Palouse and not everybody shows up for the Washington State game. But it's going to be a sellout, and certainly Buff fans can be applauded. Certainly the student section can be applauded for being very vocal, very supportive of this team. My fear is what it's going to look like if CU comes out and does a couple of three and outs with a sack on each one, a run up the middle for 1 yard, an incomplete pass, and a sack and a punt. How long this crowd is going to stick with the team before it becomes a bunch of boos every time they come off the field. I mean, this is a crowd that really wants to support a team, really wants to support a winner, but my concern is that it might not be home sweet home for the Buffs if they struggle early in this game. So something to watch out for is whether or not the crowd stays behind the team or all of a sudden it becomes a place where the Buffs don't want to play. So Brad, I'm going to come back to you for P, for preparation schedule. Anything about the scheduling? For me, it's a back-to-back game on the road for Oregon State. Anything stand out to you as far as whether or not either team has a advantage playing Pac-12? Oregon State was Pac-12 after dark last weekend. CU has already played a couple of games at 8 p.m. Mountain Time. Anything about preparation for this game or the scheduling for this game that you think might have an influence on the outcome?
You know, it's always hard to pay two on the road. It's harder when you've lost one. You know, it's not easy to get a team up to travel twice. So maybe there's a slight advantage. And again, it's a raucous crowd at CU, at least at the start. But and like I said, we're enough into this season that both of these teams know who they are. Both teams have film on the other, not perhaps Michigan football level film, but film on the other. We don't have the budget for the Michigan football's film. So I don't think there's a big difference here. It's just, like I said, it's whether or not CU coaching staff can get their guys enthused and teach them. I mean, they taught them how to win. Now they have to teach them how to come back.
Yeah. Neil, anything as far as the preparation or schedule for this game that you think might help one team or the other?
I have just a couple, actually. I mentioned before, I kind of bled over from Ida P, sorry, is that coaching staff needs to be flexible in their approach. They need to be open to change. They need to think personnel changes. For example, as Brad was mentioning earlier, perhaps some bigger bodies in the backfield to help block. What happened to Lewis Passarello? Whatever happened to our other tight ends that possibly could play H-back and help with pass blocking or could just be in the backfield as blockers? That kind of stuff. I mean, I know that sounds off the wall. These coaches have the equivalent of a PhD and a postdoc in football. I have no credentials, but something has to be done. And since we're a constructive and positive and supporting podcast, that's my effort to do that.
Yes, always positive.
Stu, we were, and Brad, we were very good in the red zone scoring. We were perfect for a while. And we didn't do very well last game against UCLA. And I'm inventing a new zone to go along with Dave Platty's red zone, the short field zone. When they end up with a turnover pretty, in plus territory and they don't do anything with it. They've got to figure out how to move the ball after a sudden change like that. It seemed like their offense was pretty vanilla at that point. And they have to anticipate when the defense is going to pull out the stops and send in everybody, including the tuba player. The defense, I think, is going to have to go with a plus one box and stop the run, try to designate that, and just trust our secondary to do what they do. I think we can match up pretty well. They may want to do something like in basketball, a box and one, and put Travis on their best receiver and just take that guy away from them. Overall, preparation, a lot of it's going to be between the ears and under the breastbone. And the coaches need to spend a lot of time with that.
Okay. Yeah, I agree that it's going to have to be, be Shiloh will be back. Shiloh Sanders said he was at the only saving grace about his targeting call was in the first half. So he was had to sit out the second half, but he will be eligible to start the game against Oregon State. I look back in terms of scheduling in 2021, the last time the Beavers came to Boulder, it was also on the back, the second half of a back-to-back road trip. They lost to Cal 2 years ago on the road, then came to Boulder, and it was that bizarre double overtime 37-34 game where the Oregon State kicker made a 60-yard field goal to tie the game at the end of regulation, and we just could not believe that that would actually happen. But then they came back, and that same kicker missed a 38-yard attempt in double overtime to allow Colorado to come away with the win. So if you believe in karma, or anything having to do with the stars aligning, I mean, this is the again, the Beavers going on the road, and their two longest road trips that they can take as a member of the Pac-12 was are to Tucson and to Boulder. So back-to-back longest road trips that they have to take. Last time they did back-to-back road games in 2021, they came to Boulder and lost, and they lost in double overtime. This game kicks off at 8 o'clock. CU had an 8 o'clock game against CSU, went to double overtime, had an 8 o'clock game against Stanford, went to double overtime. Playing at 8 o'clock this weekend against Oregon State. So if you give CU a win, I think fans will be happy to take the double overtime and stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning again. But if that's going to happen, well, we better get the W out of it. If we're going to do another double overtime game, you damn well better win it. The only thing I'd comment in terms of scheduling and preparation that the Beavers are a very good team at home. They've been kind of mediocre on the road. Their two losses, they lost to Washington State on the road, they lost to Arizona on the road. Their only two wins on the road against San Jose State and Cal. And the opponents, their non-conference game schedule, San Jose State, UC Davis, the fighting Dan Hawkinses, and San Diego State, are not world beaters. So three of their six wins are against non-conference foes that were not particularly threatening to them winning. So yeah, something there. I don't know. Not a whole lot, but keep your fingers crossed. Neil, come back to you for the last for stats. Anything in the S category that you think will be important, or any numbers that stood out to you for this game?
Well, I think the most obvious one, and we don't always pay a lot of attention to it until the last couple of weeks, is that CU has been a yellow flag machine. We've just been producing those at a horrific rate. We were much better this last week. Oregon State is not a mistake-free team. They have their share of penalties, and they're 74th in number of penalties and 81st in yardage. So they're making some, 10 and 15 yard penalties in there somewhere. We have to do what we can to try to encourage them to help us win with penalties. And CU at the same time has to be pretty much flawless in the penalty department. We've got to eliminate the senseless penalties. We've got to cut it down to two or three. The other things that come out to me is they have a fairly balanced offense. They're a little pass heavy, but they're averaging something like 185 yards per game in rushing, which is very healthy. Would love to have that in Boulder. And I think if they hit their average or are above it, as you said earlier, as both of you said earlier, it's going to be a long night for the Buffs. So that if we can get Oregon State off its game and make it play something that it doesn't like to do, which is to rely on the pass, then perhaps CU has a chance.
Okay. Thank you. Any numbers, Brad, do you want to send out to the Buff Nation for them to keep an eye on for Saturday?
Well, a stat that I hate is time of possession, because it can matter not at all. And Neil pulled it on me. I will only say that CU is 110th in the country in time of possession, and Oregon State is 31st. And if that continues, if Oregon State is able to come in and grind the ball like Neil the Concern, that stat will show in this game. We've known we had to get better at that. I love being a big strike team, but we've got to hold on to the ball because our defense can't be out there as much as they have been. So that distinguish that stat, which I oftentimes think misstates a game, is beginning to matter.
So, Brad, let me ask a question about that. That's a great point. Is do we consider not running up tempo and trying to keep our offense on the field, just dead time, which helps the defense not be on the field? Do we try to run the ball more? I thought about that and I didn't have any solution. So sorry for the surprise.
I do think some of it is slow because, again, they know who we are. I don't think the hurry up is as effective once teams have seen it repeatedly. So I do believe that slowing the pace of the game to some extent matters. I think there are times that even Shadur gets a little bit rushed. So I would prefer, honestly, that we take a minute or take a second or two in the play clock and use the hurry up as a change of pace rather than our personality.
Yeah. And it's driven me nuts every time we have a 13-yard play. We run up, and then the next play is a 2-yard play or a illegal procedure or illegal motion because we're not set. And we kill ourselves with the drive. And you can keep other teams from subbing. You can run up to the line of scrimmage and then just sit there for 20 seconds getting plays called in from the sideline. You can keep the other team from substituting if that's your goal, is to keep them from having – fresh players brought in. You can force them to play the 11 they've got without actually hiking the ball after 7 seconds. And if CU had done anything close to ball control in the second half against Stanford, we wouldn't be an unhappy bunch of Buff fans at this point. So yeah. Hindsight's always going to be 20/20. Neil and I, we were talking a little bit before we went on air that if CU was 4-4 and had lost to TCU and beaten Stanford, there'd be a whole different narrative about the CU team right now. Yeah. 4 losses to ranked teams, 4 wins against unranked teams. Pretty happy campers at that point, if that were the case right now. But, you know, the 3-0 start, the national ranking, all the publicity, all the ratings distorted our perspective a little bit. So let's finish off with our predictions. Brad, you get to go first. It's believe it's about a 12.5-point spread, or at least that's where it opened. So about a 2-touchdown game. Oregon State's favored. It was 17 against UCLA. They were at home. So pretty much if you take away the 3 points for home, both, you know, pretty much see UCLA about the same as Oregon State. So how do you see the Oregon State game unfolding, and what's your prediction for the final score?
Well, we're at home. I don't think Oregon State's overall as good a team as UCLA. So I think with some luck and some better play calling, CU can stay in this game. I am concerned about the defense wearing out on a late game, on cold weather, against a team that is going to just lean on us. And based on that, I see this being, sadly, probably along the lines of Oregon State 27, CU 21.
Okay. Neil, how do you see the Buffs doing on homecoming 2023?
Well, I think Brad had a good point about time of possession. And Oregon State is similar to Air Force Academy on offense, where they play like a boa constrictor and they limit the number of possessions that the opposing team gets by grinding it out. CU has to take advantage of their possessions. They need to limit the ground game in any way possible. But I have to think that Oregon State's going to go somewhere between 27, I'll say 30. And I'm not yet convinced that CU is going to correct its offensive stuff and the playbook on how to defense CU is pretty well known by now. Each team that we faced refines it, I'm going to say the Bucks score 17.
So 27-17 or 30-17? Where do you?
37. Sorry.
Okay. Well, we're like an old couple. You know, we kind of get to have the same feel for one another as we go on here. But I think Buff fans that are with us for the whole season and have been with the Buffs for all season kind of know where we're coming from. And I think the best unit on the field last weekend was the UCLA defense. The best unit in the game for this weekend is going to be the Oregon State offense. So if the Buffs can get four turnovers in the first half and actually capitalize on it, whole different game. Hard to count on four turnovers in a half. And, well, God help us, if we get four turnovers, we better get more than 3 points. I have it down as an Oregon State 30, Colorado 20 game. I don't know if the Buffs are going to be able to hold them under four touchdowns, and I think this offense right now is going to be hard-pressed to score three touchdowns. So, you know, hope for the best, expect the worst. Four more chances to come away with a victory or two. I think if they can get that fifth win somewhere in the month of November, the narrative going forward is going to be positive. They get two wins, then Pac-12 coach of the year, except for the guy that actually wins the conference championship and goes to the college football playoffs. So, yeah, if you get to six wins, that's this side of a miracle based upon what we've seen the last couple of games from this team. So we're going to just have to leave it at that. Fortunately, the next home game is at noon, not at 10 a.m., not at 8 p.m., but at a relatively reasonable hour of the day. Hopefully
actual football time.
Actual football time and maybe football weather. It won't be, you know, 14 degrees or, you know, 84 degrees. So we'll look forward to Arizona next week. But for now, I'll just have to say thank you to both of you, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Brad. Thanks, Stu.
Good to see y'all, and go Buffs.
Thank you both for listening to the podcast and for being a member of the Buff Nation. I hope you are subscribing to the podcast so you won't have to miss any of the upcoming episodes. We have partnered with Mile High Sports and are pleased to be part of their podcast network. As before, you can find the See You at the Game podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and other podcast sites. Or, if you're not a fan of downloading podcasts, all of the episodes can be listened to at the See You at the Game website. I will be back next week with Neil and Brad, and we will give you our review of the Oregon State game, as well as our preview for CU's last home game of the season, a noon kickoff against Arizona. Until then, be well, stay safe, and go Buffs!
Thank you for listening to our See You at the Game podcast. For links to articles and stories referenced in this podcast, go to cuatthegame.com. That's the letter C, the letter U, atthegame.com. If you have comments or suggestions, you can leave them on the website or send an email to cuatthegame@gmail.com. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please be sure to subscribe and share it with your fellow Buff fans. Until next time, when we will again see you at the game.